Hi, this is Sarah O'Kelly with Boat Radio, and I am here kind of doing, I suppose, part two with John Herlick for his Skipper's Review. So, John, I am on board your boat. Mike did talk to you, but he didn't have the luxury and the pleasure of actually being on your boat, and it is absolutely amazing. Like I mentioned to you, I don't know anything about sailboats, but we are sitting in the cabin with a blue kind of cockpit. Thank you very much. with a blue tarp over us in the shade, thank God, because it's scorching hot out here in Florida. It's what, probably like 92 degrees 90 or
so. Something, I'm sure.
And we're at the dock, and we're in this amazing close to nature sailboat, but no more than 100 yards, there's the ritzy clematis, which I am sure you are anxious to get away from.
Well, I endorse and embrace the assets that the town are. That's why I keep coming back while I'm sort of parked in South Florida waiting for the hurricane season to go away. So clematis and the ritz and the glitz isn't what makes this work, but the dock and the people and the grocery store, and it's just a very walkable town. It's a really good basin, as we call it, where we anchor. I usually anchor, this doesn't work on radio, but 100 yards or so off of this dock just to the north. And in an hour, I can be north at the Lake Worth Inlet where the water is clear, and I can scrape the bottom of the boat, or I can go out into the Atlantic and sail. So
do you do that usually, like once a day you go out in the ocean and go for a nice little sail?
By no means, because I am more often than not involved in projects, and going out into the ocean means putting projects on hold. So,
and your goal is to get out of here?
My goal is to keep going. Not so much get out of here, but keep going, absolutely. So, the goal is to go south, hit down to Bahamas in November and do that thorny path, get my way to South America, figure it out, change the plans somewhere in between. I don't know, but that's the direction.
I did love your analogy before, and I mentioned this to Mike, of how your plan, as when you have children, is to maybe raise them in a certain way, and it's very comparable to sailing, because it
doesn't go
that way. No, you
are
not
wrong.
Do you have kids? I have two kids.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I'm going to...
All good intentions.
I'm going to let her cry herself to sleep, and, you know, minute 35, when they're vomiting from crying for 35 minutes, you're like, well, that was a horrible plan. I think I'm going to go pick her up. That's how sailing feels to me anyway. You have to have a plan, and you have to be, I think, big enough to say, it was a horrible plan, let's change it.
But your initial plan is to hit the Bahamas, from what I hear.
Absolutely, to hit the Bahamas, beginning of November, give or take, weather notwithstanding, hurricanes notwithstanding. So somewhere around the end of October, I'll start actually cranking back into ready mode, figure out where into the Bahamas I want to go exactly.
Now, will the fact that you're running into the winter months, will that affect you in weather-wise?
I mean, it changes the trade winds and cycles down there, but A, I can't yet pretend to be an expert at that because I haven't done it, although I know it happens. And B, that would be season. That would be the beginning of the time when the majority of people who are going to the Bahamas start to go. So it is a good time
Have you mentioned people? Have you met fellow sailors that
you
can get together with?
Some who pass through.
Sailor gossip.
So I don't do that part very well. I'm a wallflower, or whatever the water equivalent of a wallflower would be. I like to just sit over on the edge and be slightly misanthropic and watch everyone from afar. But I've made really good friends here while I've been here, which is awesome. And I've had some almost all good, some sort of interesting interactions with sailors who've come through, helped people with problems on their boats, watched in horror as people have crashed into the docks, you know, all those things that come. So, but that's another good part of being here, and it's a part of what has sort of made passing this much time in one place plausible for me. Because when I first got here, quite frankly, the thought of being here for 5-6 months or however long it will be at the end, was, after having been on the move since November, thought of stopping and staying in one place that long was sort of mind-numbing. It took me a couple of months to get used to it. I think I was a little cranky. But that's it. And I sort of thrust myself into it. And I met people the first day. I was docked on the South Dock. And there was a flurry of activity around me when I first got there. I met this woman who was standing on the dock crying and found out that the activity was all on her father's boat. And her father had just died a few days before. And the boat was in terrible shape. She'd flown in, and all the people from the boating community were there helping her out, and that was, it was like day one, I got initiated, and I was helping her carry trash out and boxes to her car, and she was giving me books off her boat, and all of a sudden, bam, West Palm just sort of adopted me, and here I've been.
Well, at this stage, okay, so you've been here, what, for 4 months now?
5 months? I've come and gone, but I first got here, I want to say, beginning of April. I would have to actually count that out on my fingertips. What is
Are
it?
You
April,
getting
May,
bit?
June, July, August, September? Did September just start?
Yes.
Okay, so it has been September. It has been 5. I'm in my 6th month, and I have 1 more to go.
And are you itching now to go?
I'm good. No, I'm eager. I'm aspiring to go. Mm-hmm. I'm not itching to go, and I'm like, I got to get out of here, because I've got the freedom. If West Palm gets on my nerves, you know, I pull the anchor and raise the sail and go off and sail somewhere else. I've been north, I've been south, I've been down to Miami. And I've been south of here on my boat. I've been to Miami without the boat. I've been as far as Boca on boats, go back north, so.
Are you still, like, this is a decision that you made, maybe 3 years ago? That you decided that this was something that you want to do with your life?
I actually decided that quite a while ago, probably more like 5-6, that I really thought it was a viable idea. And then it took a bit of looking for boats, getting friends with boats to let me come spend time on their boats so
How
I could
do
not
you feel
be a complete
now?
Idiot. I feel like I'm a really comfortable, still noob, as we say. I'm the newbie. So I understand I'm still at the shallower end of the learning curve. But in my 4th year, you know, I'm not walking. It's not, all the little things aren't scary anymore. And all the little things were petrifyingly scary in the beginning. I think good way of scary, if that makes any sense. Because
okay,
I took a very real responsibility to not ruin the boat and to not be that bad boater that nobody wanted to see coming. So I was really eager. It's just like picking up a new instrument. You don't want to go through the "it sounds terrible" phase, but you got to keep playing it terribly until you can get good enough that people want to hear you. And
so
I don't sound terrible anymore, but I might not be like, you know, rent. I might not be selling out Carnegie Hall or anything.
So that sounds to me like, you got the technical aspect of it pretty much. You feel comfortable with it. What about mentally? Are you still happy with the choice that you made?
Absolutely. I had that one I nailed day one. I had that down before I moved on the boat. You should have seen it, just months, maybe years of sitting in my apartment reading boating blogs, some from friends, some from, you know, I don't know if celebrity is the right word, but, you know, Bo Galley and Lynn and Larry Party and those people. So reading the experts, getting the books, reading sailing novels, you know, that were nonfiction, but also reading, you know, just getting my mechanical books together. I would just sit there as if it were a story and read chapter after chapter of how to fix things for a boat that I didn't even own yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was.
So a lot of research was involved.
A lot of research. It was more than research for me. I think it was just immersion. I didn't mm-hmm. have the boat yet. You know, and at one point on that curve, I had all that material and had a boat that I was buying, which got me closer, at which point all that insanity was replaced with maybe just staring at photos I took of the boat endlessly for hours and hours and hours. But all of that was me mentally being as in this world as I could before I actually had the boat. So that part was easy. The no heat, no air conditioning, no refrigerator, cooking in the boat, doing my thing, living on the boat.
Did you practice that in your apartment? Turn
Practice
off the
what?
Air and turn off the heat.
I believe it or not, in my apartment in Washington, D.C., I think almost never ran the air conditioning unless I was having people over, and I knew they would not think that my apartment was as comfortable as I thought it was. So if I was having a group of friends over, I might have turned it on. And in the winter, I think I kept my heat at like 58 or 60, so I was already insane. And that was not practicing for the boat. That was just the way.
It's just where you are.
I don't like sitting in there with, you know, it's 20 degrees outside Fahrenheit and the thing's just blasting out dry heat all day long. Doesn't make me happy.
So you have three children, right?
I have three children, all in their 20s.
And so this, you're... Well, it sounds to me like your passion has been with you for quite a while. Has it rubbed
boat
off
passion?
On
them?
Yeah.
Yes, the boat passion's been with me for quite a while. Has it rubbed off on them? I don't know how to answer that. I don't think any of them is in a place in life where they're going to, you know, go buy a boat, if that makes sense. But they all came and spent time with me on the boat in Annapolis, and were as infatuated with it and the life and the life on water. My youngest daughter calls it water camping.
Perfect.
Which I do think is perfect. And they all like to camp. I took them all camping when they were little, and we all like that. So, yeah, I have delightfully, lovably weird children who, like, don't text, aren't on social media, love the boat. But that's a little exaggeration, I think. They actually have Facebook accounts, but you never see them. They don't. They're strange. The throwbacks, which I take credit for, and then wish they would sometimes break their rules. Just text me. That's what I was telling them. I love that you don't text. Text me.
Break it
I
off.
I love you for not for texting everyone else. I'm in Florida. I'm bored. Text your father. But so in that regard, they, you know, they love the boat thing. My son, when I first set out in November of last year to sail from Annapolis down to here, was coming with me. He was in between jobs, and so he had actually come up to the boat in Annapolis. We were all provisioned and ready to go, but that lasted one day. We were motoring south in the Chesapeake Bay, as I told Mike in that other interview, into a headwind, and the transmission just went out.
Oh,
2-3 hours into the trip.
Yeah.
So it was making a horrible noise. I called my friend. I was like, sounds like this. I don't think it sounds good. He said, that doesn't sound like it sounds good. You should turn the engine off. So we shut her down, sailed back. And so my son was going to have done the ICW with me from Annapolis down to however far I could get him, and then stick him on a bus to Fort Lauderdale so he could take the plane back home.
But that didn't
end up happening, although we spent an awesome week and a half or 2 weeks on the boat in Annapolis. We have many similar...
Those moments are precious.
Yeah, they are. Hanging out in the boat, drinking scotch and playing chess. Can't beat that. So, with no transmission. But, so that was awesome. They all like it. As I said, back to your question, which was if the passion's rubbed off on them. I don't know if that's answerable, because I don't think they're... No one's left and where they were living and moved to be in a seaside town so they can live on a boat. But they all love it and support it.
They understand it and love it.
Understand it, love it, support what I'm doing, want to come visit me at different spots as I'm doing my thing, wherever I'm doing it.
And so I know Mike is dying to see the inside of your boat. As am I.
All right.
And so can you give us a little walkthrough and describe what it is that we're seeing?
Absolutely.
And I will, too, and you can explain to me what it is we're seeing.
I will be more than happy to give you a guided tour, but I'm going to make you go first.
Okay.
Because otherwise, I'm going to get in your way. So the only thing I'll tell you about this companionway is it's done much easier backwards than forwards.
Right. So there's three steps down, and I first am seeing there's a table with like a red little corner couch.
So. This is, you're now below decks.
Yeah.
You're on Ave for real. Not sure where to start. So, yeah, down the companionway here, and the engine is sort of right under, well, under where we were sitting.
Mm-hmm. That would be, and it's beautiful.
No, the cockpit sole is
Maranti. Gosh, I have to look up what the other one is. Two woods, neither one of which I'd heard of. Mm-hmm. That floor was actually made by her former owners while they were doing their circumnavigation. The old floor was just plywood. And they actually were in, I want to say Crete, although somewhere in the Med. I feel like it was Crete. And they found an old lumber mill that sold them some one-offs, and they took it, and they found a place that would let them come in after hours and cut and plane the wood while the factory was closed. So that was all. And the table as well, made by them while they were there. A lot of love. So, and a lot that's probably changed. I can't tell you how she was originally delivered because I didn't get to see her. The pole that supports this table.
Stripper pole.
As it's called by just about everyone who comes down below. Not only supports the table, but supports the coach roof. So it gives you more stability if you're out, like, getting mm-hmm. rolled upside down in a storm of some sort. This drops down so that this can all turn into a big bed.
It's kind of like built, the pole is built into the table, so it's not something that gets in the way. It's just actually something that's very handy to be there to grab.
It is two things, to grab, to hold onto for you, and also to keep the roof above you as stable as could be. And this pole right behind you, same thing. This, there was a pole here when the boats were built, because I've seen it in photos of other Rawsons. They were in that classic 60s style, this sort of lathe-turned wooden posts that might have been inside your front door of a house that was built in the 50s or 60s. And Jamie Bryson took that out. That's stainless. He had that fabricated up in Alaska, I know from his boat, his book. So that, again, just kind of keeps everything stable and gives you something to grab onto. Books all around back here, mm-hmm. storage everywhere, storage, that my battery and shortwave radio, SSB, sorry, single sideband radio, are all in a locker right under here. It's a big locker under that cushion that would be to port that is full of food.
Cushions are in very good shape.
They are, and the parts that aren't are really well hidden. It's like lift the blanket off the starboard side, you can see the tear. That's part of being old and having an older boat.
These are the original cushions.
Original to the boat, but the cushions that the former owners made. So they are, in fact, many
70s,
years old.
80s?
Maybe 80s.
Maybe.
I'm not sure exactly when they made them. It's been a while. I would guess, actually, probably when they did the floor. Aft over here on the port side, sort of...
All the gimmicks. He just pushed back like a sliding wooden door, and there's all kinds of gadgets back here.
Three-part sliding door there that hides what you might want to call the nerve center of the boat, electronics-wise. So I have my engine panel. They're almost always outside in the cockpit. And when I first bought the boat, I was just floored that that was inside and hated it because I couldn't see what my RPMs were. And it drove me nuts. And then I realized that every friend that I have that has an engine panel out in the cockpit, the gauges are all glazed over and full of moisture, and you can't. The engine's got a governor on it anyway. I couldn't run this thing at too many RPM if I wanted to. And after a few days of motoring around, you could hear the engine. You say, oh, that's good. We're somewhere around 2,000, maybe 2,200. And you learn. So I'm as happy now that it's inside as I was.
So the original design of the boat, in fact, put all the instruments here, or the new people did
that. See, we keep going back to that original. So original to me, as in that's where it was when I got the boat. Original to the boat, I have no clue. It would have been. So original to the boat, this boat would have been powered by an Atomic 4, just old school little, I don't know how many horsepower they had, but it wasn't enough. I believe gasoline. Although don't quote me, although I know of the Atomic 4, I've never had one, seen one, or worked on one. But that was the original engine. So I now have a universal 35 horsepower diesel. And this panel, the engine instrument cluster, if you will, would have been installed with the engine. So that was around 2000. Pardon me. So, But all this is new. There was no cabinet here. It was sort of, I have photos. I actually have photos on my laptop that I can show you some befores.
Okay.
If it would offer any perspective. But it's my stereo, because music is always important. I've got my built-in VHF. So this is the one that goes to an antenna on top of the mast. So it gives me more power and a longer range because it's got a higher antenna. I have a handheld as well. But, of course, the handheld has less power. And since radio signals like that travel line of sight, the higher the antenna, the farther it goes.
Gotcha.
So that's what that is. And that bottom funny-looking thing is a single sideband radio, which is that spectacular sort of think shortwave radio that I use to communicate. I've talked to people as far away as the Virgin Islands, up the U.S. coast, all the way to Maine. Hear people from the West Coast, Hawaii. It works better at night because the signals from those bounce off the ionosphere. I know that's completely not interesting, but it's fascinating.
It will be to other people.
It is fascinating nonetheless, because you talk and it bounces off the bottom of, let's call it the atmosphere, even though it's not, and it just keeps bouncing its way around the world and gets really far. So that's that. All this is redone by me.
Is the boat in a place now where if you decided, okay, the hurricanes are done, over... Mm-hmm. I am ready to go.
Yes.
Could you go?
Tomorrow.
You could.
Yeah. I would need more food. But that wasn't your question. The boat is never going to be done, but the boat's ready to go. Yep. Sails are good. Sail inventory is good. I've checked through everything. Boat's rigged. She's healthy. The engine starts. I'm just...
That must make you feel...
Very
good.
Happy, yes, in every regard. Proud because it wouldn't start when I got the boat, and also, even more importantly, happy that I know that if I need the engine, because you don't have to be in a bad storm or a big body of water to be out there and things go wrong, and you're like, oh, crud. This is going really, really poorly.
So now you know how to fix the engine and all that?
I had mechanical experience working on cars growing up. My whole life, but no experience on diesels. So you buy the books, spend that year before you get the boat, sitting at home in your apartment, having a cold beer and reading books about engines and figure it out. So I certainly don't know everything. I couldn't fix everything. But again, back to the fact that 3 years plus ago, it wouldn't start. Now it runs like a top. So I'm effective within whatever the scope of my knowledge is, however narrow that scope may be.
There's lots of books around here. What are you reading at the moment?
I tend to read a few books at a time. I am still reading Don Quixote, which I've never read before in my life. I'm right about halfway through that. And I'm also reading a book by André Gide called The Counterfeiters.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
You never know. You might need some cash for it as you're going.
It's not about that, but I do like reading. And then I have stuff that I can't just leave
heavy
away.
Heavy weather sailing.
I wish I liked that book more. I keep picking it up because I think I'm going to read it and learn stuff. And although on the radio you can't see this, this book isn't, the ocean's gone to hell, this is what you should do. This book is charts and graphs and whole information and sail physics, and it makes my brain lock.
Yeah, so you've read a ton of sailing books in your home time.
I've read a good number.
So give us the top two that you like the best.
I don't know if I could
do that.
That
you learned the most.
One of the ones that was my favorite would have been the first nonfiction sailing narrative that I read, and I don't remember the name of it. I could find out and let you know, but I don't own the book. I borrowed it from someone. I read it. I loved it. I gave it back, and I enjoyed it forever, but I don't honestly remember the name. The book Dove, I don't know if you're familiar with the book Dove, which is about a young boy, I think in Hawaii, but who circumnavigated at 16, I believe. Really good story. So
I'll get that one.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's not not the fattest book on the bookshelf. It's a good, quick 2-3 day
nice,
read.
Nice, easy one to remember, too. Dove.
Yeah, great, very uplifting, very, I think, powerful story, and, you know, complete with happy parts and scary parts and all that. It's funny, I was having a discussion just last week with someone about Bernard. I don't know if I can pronounce his last name correctly, Montessier.
It would be Montessier,
one of the
Frenchman.
One he was indeed. He would be one of the big boys of constant cruising and circumnavigating and writing about it. And I was commenting on how much I liked his books, and I was discussing this with a friend who very much didn't like his books. But I think that depends on what you're looking to get out of it. My friend said that he found them to be arrogant and short, and I don't know, a few other things, and I said, yeah, that's probably all true. I was like, but it was all really just, to me, very raw and real,
mm-hmm.
and not painted into a pretty picture, which probably also fed into this person's consuming it, not liking it. He didn't find it. He wanted more sugar in it, and I kind of liked it without sugar. So
yeah, it makes it interesting without the sugar.
Yeah, I liked it. I just thought it was all very, very raw and gritty.
So let's move deeper in. We stopped at the, eating area plus stroke
yes.
sleeping area.
This would be the main salon. You're standing right dead midships in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Salon, if you will. So settee to your left, which seats maybe 4 people. The table kind of swings around. Settee on the starboard side, which actually goes all the way out. So that's actually a berth. So I can sleep in here.
Mm.
And that would be the first choice for if and when I ever get to cross oceans and big seas, because I can drop a leeboard in. I won't roll out of the bed.
Keep you tucked
in. Won't get knocked around while I'm out sailing. Slightly further, so forward, starboard, the galley.
Mm-hmm.
2 compartment sink and a hand pump and food everywhere before.
Yes.
Behind.
Lovely stainless steel,
yes.
right? Hand pump.
Yeah, it works very well. 3-burner stove, early 80s vintage Force 10.
Gas?
Gimbaled propane, yeah, so gas.
Where do you put the gas cylinder?
Outside.
Oh.
Yeah. Back in the cockpit in propane lockers where they drain.
The toilet.
So this would be the room that in the original boat was the head. Yeah, it was the toilet. The people I bought the boat from removed the head.
Mm-hmm.
In Hawaii, on the process of their circumnavigation. Another amusing, Jamie Bryson, he being the former owner, line when I was on the phone with him one day. We were just discussing it. I would talk to him every week. He actually died last month.
Oh.
But we pretty much weekly, I would say right up to the end, kept in touch on the phone. And I would call, and his wife would go, oh, it's the captain. She would say, Jamie, it's the captain. Pick up the phone, and we would chat, and you could just...
He had Parkinson's, right?
He had Parkinson's. Mm. Yep. So she used to call me the lifesaver. She's like, don't stop calling. You're the lifesaver. And we were chatting one day, and I don't know where it came from, why we were talking about the commode on the old boat, but we were. And he said, I took that damn thing out in Hawaii. I left it on top of a picnic table at a marina. It was the happiest day of my life to have that damn thing off my boat. He said, I got a cedar bucket, and it went all the way around the world on this cedar bucket. So,
simple man.
I live in a compromised reality. This is not a cedar bucket by any means, but it's a composting head. So I don't have a holding tank. There is no space on this boat that's dedicated to a fiberglass tank that's full of stuff that you really don't necessarily want to keep on the boat. So it was originally a head. He converted it into an office. Literally had a stool bolted down, like a swivel stool. He was a shorter man. So he would sit in here with his typewriter, do his writing, had his books. This wall, which is all books for me, was all cassette tapes for him. He must have had 400 cassette tapes on the boat when I bought the boat. Kept his music in there, kept his books in there, and would sit in there with his typewriter and do his writing. So it's sort of a hybrid room right
now. It is
now.
A cozy little spot.
It is. I
it's
could...
like, what, 3 feet across maybe?
Yeah, I would say
maybe,
maybe yeah, 4 feet wide or so by 3 foot, fore to aft.
Yeah,
it's a little.
It's just beautiful wood, and there's bookshelves on two sides, and then you have like a little pin board with pictures and stuff.
And my Suez Canal certificate, and my Panama Canal certificate, both originals. So I like those. I tried to sit in the stool and literally could not fold myself into that stool. I do. And it wasn't that I could and it was uncomfortable or that I could, but I thought it wasn't easy enough. It wouldn't happen. So, the stool went away. It went into the dumpster in Reedville back when I bought the boat.
Now you have a fancy schmancy toilet.
Now I have, yes, so I don't sit in there and use it as an office. But then again, Jamie Bryson didn't have a laptop. So, you know, things do change. Lots of books in there. I do treat it as an office. I keep, it's where my kimchi ferments and my fruits and vegetables live, and bananas or lemons go in the hanging basket. So it serves many purposes. It has my only digital clock on the wall so that if I, for some reason, need to know what day it is or what time it is, I can look. Rarely do I really care. And all my controls for the lights that are on the mast. So the spreader lights that shine down, running lights, anchor lights, where I turn on the radar system, all of that, because the mast would be coming in right above your head. It's deck stepped, so the mast actually stops on the deck.
Yeah, there's like a little skylight right above my head. And when I look up, I can see the mast.
Yeah.
Straight up.
So the wires that are coming down inside the mast are sneaking down through the coach roof right there behind where you can't see and come down in. So that's why there's an electrical panel in there where I can control all of that stuff. I've got a potato locker, not a thing a lot of boats have, down there on the very bottom of that room. So you could throw in 50 pounds of potatoes and they won't go bad because they breathe and they stay in the dark so they don't turn green.
I know about potatoes.
And that would be...
You have like a cool system here of storage of dried goods. You have like Tupperware containers in cubbies secured by elastic bands.
That is exactly right. And what was a bookshelf when I got the boat.
So clever.
When I bought the boat, this shelf, which was made from wood that was drifting by them. They were on some river, I don't know where. And this wood was drifting by, and they did what all good sailors do. They said, "Ooh, I think I can do something with that." And they snatched it out of the river and kept it. And he made a bookshelf from it. It's got what was the only mirror in the boat on the top, which now holds my only two, actually, glass glasses, which I keep just for good scotch. And that's no lie. But from there on down, it was just full of paperback books. And most of them, quite frankly, from...
Now it's got peanuts and cookies. Just like muesli.
And some oatmeal. Some flour and all the go-to stuff and coffee. Thank God for the tin of coffee. So, coffee. Yeah, I converted it. You know, Kindles would be another thing that didn't exist when they were going around the world. So,
lighting. Oh, yeah. There's lighting there.
Yeah, lighting everywhere. All of what I installed, all of which is LED. Installed.
And you learned that from your books and...
It's just simple.
Yeah, okay.
12-volt systems are really pretty doggone simple. So,
screwing a light bulb is simple. Wiring a boat, I don't put it in the same category.
Well, that will give my dad credit for.
Okay,
so
fair
he's
enough.
The one that taught me all those skills. So, and then forward more, you're welcome to go through there into
stateroom.
It's okay. You can call it bedroom. You can sit on the edge of the bed if you want. I've got my one built-in
violin,
which I don't know how to play, but I sure like plucking at it anyway.
My daughter plays violin.
Well, send her up. She can borrow mine. It's not in tune. I see you checking, and it's not in tune.
And it's also missing a string.
Yeah, I broke a string last week.
But it's beautiful.
It is. That was a gift from my mother. Something to play on.
Did your mother play violin?
No, she just found out that I was around one day when I think I said in passing, maybe I'll get a violin before I leave. And when I'm bored sailing around the world, I teach myself how to play the violin. And lo and behold, for my 50th birthday, look what showed up.
She was listening.
She's always listening.
Yeah.
So that is the V berth. That's where I sleep.
Very comfy.
Longer than the bed is, but it is very, very comfortable. Lots of lockers on both sides for clothing.
Yeah.
Lots of storage below it. My fresh water tank is below that. And that takes up the majority of the room under it. But there are more lockers down below where I've got engine parts, technical stuff,
like that. And under your left elbow on the port side, aft of the berth but forward of the office, is the sail locker. So this is all sails from there down.
Okay.
I have, I think, 10 or 11 different sails. So some of which are redundant, but they give me protection in case one rips or tears while I'm doing something. Most of them aren't redundant. They're just slightly, you know, I've got storm sails. I've got sails that hank on, sails that go on the roller furler, all kinds of stuff. So
now if I'm looking and I'm seeing, you know, bedding and sheets and clothing. Mm-hmm. How do you do your washing?
I, right up until West Palm, would kind of do this at the other mirror. I installed that one. Which I don't know why it's there. I don't use it, really. It's not like I'm doing my makeup in the morning. But it's good. You know, if you eat popcorn and you need to floss and you need to find that piece of popcorn, there's a mirror right there. I now do my laundry in buckets on the boat, on the deck, just like you would if you were actually out of the country and maybe laundromats weren't a thing. And it was a sudden inspiration I had. I had kept keeping quarters and collecting quarters and cashing in bills for quarters and going to the laundromat, borrowing a car or riding my bike way too far to do laundry.
Use fresh water for it? Does that use up a little bit too much water,
well,
though?
See, it's the beauty of being in West Palm. I have right outside the boat all the fresh water I could possibly want. So I saved the quarters. The fresh water is right there. Would you like me to move aft so you can get out of the horribly hot stateroom?
It's actually not that bad because we have windows all over the place and skylights.
Yeah,
and
a lot of ventilation.
It is kind of a breezy day today.
Yeah,
or is it?
Goodness.
I don't know. It feels like it is to me because we're down
the
on
the cockpit.
Water.
But, yes, I do my laundry.
I love it down here.
In a bucket on the deck. But I just started doing that a few months ago, and it's actually really nice. I'm glad I'm not dragging it all off to the laundromat anymore.
It dries in a second, right?
It does dry in a second. And I do a much better job, or it does a much better job of getting clean than I expected it to. This would be my agitator. Looks like a foot.
What's an agitator?
This is. So I fill up a 5-gallon bucket and put in about a tablespoon of soap, put in the laundry, and I stomp on it for about 15 minutes.
Excellent.
And then I let it sit overnight and wring it out the next morning and rinse it out and hang it up on the lifelines and look a little neurotic, and it dries in the sunshine and everything's fine. Although I probably tend to be a little wrinkly, but who cares?
I don't think the fish are going to mind.
I don't think the fish are going to mind either, and I think anybody that does mind is probably not someone I'm keen to hang out with for too long.
Exactly.
Anyway, so that, I think, would be the bulk of the below decks.
I'd say done an amazing job, but obviously I haven't seen it before. But I'm looking at it now, and it looks beautiful to me.
The four pictures, and I think it speaks to what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reacting when he interviewed me, said out loud, you know, John is aboard Ave Del Mar, his boat, which he has painstakingly restored. And my brain kind of said, you know, that's right, and yet it's kind of not right. So it's right in that it's clean and warm and functional, and all that's because of what I did. And all these electrical circuits exist and work because I installed them, the battery monitors and all that. And at the same time, you know, this is not the boat that... There's always that guy that buys a boat, builds a, you know, tent around it at the boatyard, and spends a decade every weekend and every evening of his life toiling on the boat. And those boats come out, and they belong in magazines. And rightly so. And they're beautiful. But they're beautiful in ways that my boat is not ever going to be, because that painstaking restoration was to make her saleable and usable, which involves having things on her deck and getting nicks and
your
getting
boat's
bumps.
For sailing.
My boat is for sailing.
Not for looking at.
Yeah. So I want her to be as pretty as she can be while being functional. She's a working farm, not a country estate, with a boxwood garden and staff. I don't have staff. I don't have a boxwood garden. You know, I've got a working farm.
She definitely does have a very warm Well, besides the obvious fact of it being warm, but just a aura. Warm aura.
I think so. I'm glad you do, too. I got it when I first came down.
I mean, it could have also, you know, the beautiful wood that we're basically surrounded by
helps
certainly contributes to
a
it.
Lot. Although I'll tell you this, for fear of sounding as crazy as I actually am, I've been on boats that have gorgeous wood, but no character.
Yeah, no, this has got character.
And this boat's got a lot of character and some gorgeous wood, so I'd rather have that than the inverse.
You've got two plants. I really do a lot.
I love my plants, and they do a lot for me because I feel like I have something with me on the boat. It's living, and it's symbiotic, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm giving them CO2, and they're giving me oxygen. But it's kind of like having cats. I get to take care of them. They're kind of hard to kill.
What about that? Did you think of taking a cat with you?
I would, but I fear. And I love cats, and I think that a boat is an awesome cat environment. I don't want to be an irresponsible cat owner and get to that point where I get to a country and I want to buy an old used motorcycle and tear around in the mountains for a couple of weeks and leave the boat tied up, and what do I do with the cat? And I can't get a cat and then one day be like, well, screw that. I don't want a cat anymore. Give it away. It doesn't work like that. So I'm sort of
understandable
holding off only because I don't know what my dynamic's going to be, and I might get, assuming that the trip south happens and I survive it, and now I'm thinking around down in South America, maybe I'll wake up one day and go, you know, not once have I been in a spot where having a cat would have been a problem, and I'll find a feral cat and bring it on board and love it and sort of hate it at the same time because that's what cats do. So,
very true. Yeah,
no cats, but the plants are doing very well. One I bought myself, one was a gift from a marina neighbor up in Annapolis. And it gives you something, just something to watch, something that depends on you.
It does. They stand out as soon as you come down.
Yeah, so.
Let's go up top and have a look.
I'd love to. Now you're in the breeze. So you want to go forward?
Yeah.
We're going to do that right over this way. Probably in the wind. Don't trip over that.
Okay.
Excellent handle.
Oh, right, that's real good up here.
Yes, it does. So, there's a whisker pole right under you there on the port side deck. So that would be what we hook, if you don't know, into the mast to pull out either for a flying spinnaker or to pull out a jib. We need to give it a short sort of lateral footprint, not so much coming back.
Now, you mentioned when you were talking to Mike that the rigging...
It is somewhat non-traditionally rigged. See it. Cap shroud, so it goes all the way from the top of the mast down the side. This is a running back stay, so that gives you some redundancy right there. This is what you would unhook, take back to the back, and cinch down to give your one single back stay some help if you're going up a big wind. But these shrouds, this one right here, in particular, not typically found on boats of this size, is kind of extra. And then forward, I have three forestays, really, I've got the roller furling on the jib, which is itself a stay. Just forward of it, I mean like 8 inches forward of the jib, a forestay, which I can hang a sail onto.
On your trip down, you came down through the Intracoastal, right?
I did.
So, what day, like I'm sure the first day, like you mentioned, was terrifying, of course, as it, you know, it would be kind of crazy if it wasn't. So then, what stage was it that...
You know what it was? I had to stop and think about it. It was windy as all get up my first day, but I was convinced that I was in the Chesapeake Bay and that I had to fly my sails. So I was out trying to raise the main in probably 20 knots of wind and single-handing
you know, lack sleep and all this. I fought with that thing for about 45 minutes and managed, I think, only to drift down the Severn River a little bit, or whatever that river is right there. Screw up the sail. Screw up my plan. I was like, screw it. Tied it out.
What I'm wondering is, what stage in your trip did you start to maybe wake up and not feel like, oh, I gotta raise the sails again today?
That is a very fair question, and I think that comes in stages.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are things that you no longer fear, or maybe dread would be a better word, as much as you did, but you don't necessarily feel like you've aced them yet. But let me answer your question. So I want to say about a week into it, anchoring, which went very well for me right from the very first night that I ever lived at anchor. I didn't have issues. But my lack of self-confidence in choosing anchorages, my lack of self-confidence in trying to figure out whether or not I was positioned correctly within the anchorage and things like that had sort of fizzled away to where they weren't static in my head anymore. I could pull in. I was pretty confident with what I picked on the chart before I got there. Swing in, see if it actually is what you perceived it to be when you were reading the chart. Drop the hook, set it, feel good, throw the snub line on. And
so reading charts, you taught yourself that too?
Yes. I don't know how good I am at it. I think I'm good. I just would sit there and look at them. I got programs. So I don't have a chart plotter per se. I do have paper charts, but electronically I use an iPad. So it's got GPS in it. It works brilliantly. And my friends call me the redundancy king. I've got redundancy there because I have my good iPad. I have an older iPad, plus I have the iPhone. And the program's on all of them. So unless the satellites plummet from the sky, they can fail sequentially, and I would still have other things that would give me. And I also, on the boat, have two other just built-in Garmin GPS units, which I could then look up and check on the paper charts. So I've got all that. I learned how to read the charts. Just, I don't know, you look at it and hanging out. If you meet someone along the way, you're like, what the heck does this mean? What is this symbol? Like, oh, that's a submerged wreck. You're like, oh, crap. Wish I'd known that. But I haven't hit any of them yet. And that's the one that comes to mind. I couldn't for the life of me figure out. I couldn't even figure out how to Google it. I'm like, what is this? Can't type in Google. What is this weird-ass looking symbol on my chart? And get the answer. But read the charts. That all went well. I think docking is 10 times the rush of fear or trepidation that anchoring ever is. I've not yet.
I've been boating for 10 years, and I still, when I see approach a dock, I'm going, oh, no. Because there's so many, there's the current, the wind, all kinds of stuff.
You tried the sailboat.
Forget it. No.
Again, I was pretty lousy at it in the beginning, but, you know, I only hit a few things. I did put a scratch in a neighbor's boat in Annapolis way back in the very beginning, which I had their phone number, I think, so I texted him. I was like, I did this, I'll pay for it. It wasn't a big thing. But it was hugely traumatic to me, even though the scratch on his boat wasn't that big. And that was just me learning things that I didn't understand, how the wind worked versus the current versus prop walk, which is a big thing on my boat. You can't steer this boat in reverse. And there's no exaggeration in that. You can't. It's not steerable. All you have is, when you put this boat in reverse, I have prop walk that will pull the stern of the boat to port pretty severely. So the only steering you have is, you know, if I put this thing in reverse...
That's just with this boat, not with all sailboats.
Well, most sailboats have prop walk of one sort or another. The direction's going to depend on which way your prop is angled.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them have it more severe and some less. I've been on boats that you can back up like you'd back up a Chevy into a parking space, and it does whatever you tell it to do. My boat is not one of those boats. My boat is sort of like trying to get a crazy thoroughbred racehorse to back into a stall, and it's just kind of standing there looking at you going, I don't want to do that. And you're like, well, what if we push more? And then it goes sideways and it gets stuck in the gate stall, and then it's bucking, and then the other horse is pissed off.
It's rearing up and you're like getting hurt.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my boat. I found a discussion about it online one time back when I still thought I was just an idiot. Now I think I'm an idiot and the boat can't be steered in reverse. But there was a whole discussion where people were chiming in with their best how impossible is it to steer a Rawson in reverse stories, and it made me feel much, much better. So, but that's part of it. You learn whether or not it can, how to get out of this. I was in a horrible slip, my last slip in Annapolis, a beautiful marina and a beautiful slip, but we backed up to the back of another slip at a neighboring marina. My boat's 30 feet, but with the bowsprit and the wind vane, I'm maybe 37 in total. And there was about 30 feet in between my last piling and the back of the motor hanging off the boat behind. So I couldn't even back straight out and turn. It was at an angle. It was horrible. But that's why those things teach you. And you would learn that you could kind of walk your way out and use the prop walk to steer the stern of the boat the way you want and make it do what you want to do.
So say you're me and I go, you know what, I really want to just take off to the Bahamas on a sailboat. I've never sailed before.
Right.
You did have a little bit of experience with some friends.
Correct.
Right?
Not a lot, but some, yes.
But some. So to me, the way I would approach it would be take classes or something.
Yeah, you're
like
smarter
that.
Than I am.
No, I'm different than you. Your first approach really was read, get knowledge.
My first approach was read. Yeah, I think I fully grasp the magnitude of how quickly things can go bad. And again, you don't have to be in an ocean to fear for your life when things go bad. You could be on a 23-foot Catalina in the middle of a little bay. So I think I perceive that very fully. So I read a lot. I just wanted to know that my screw-ups were going to be not from lack of effort to learn what I was doing before I did it, and not from lack of preparation. It's probably the right way to put it. And then that's another reason that I didn't want to go outside to come down. I don't have that experience. But then I'm also missing day after day of the learning experience of coming down. And that's what that did get. And when I reference different bodies of water, different weather dynamics, you're in rivers, you're in bays, you're in canals, you go through locks, you dock, you anchor, you have to pull off and get fuel. And every single time you do that, you learn, or at least you should. But there's not a single day on the boat, without exaggeration, that I don't learn something. There's not a time that I dock, that I don't step off the boat and go, okay, what did I do right? What should I have done differently? That wind was doing this more than I expected it to. There are more dynamics that can exist than I think any one person could possibly experience.
And so docking, you don't have a lot of opportunities to practice that, really.
Not so many. But there are people who live going from dock to dock who are probably masterfully good at it, probably also have boats that maneuver differently than mine. But single-handed docking is a whole additional layer of complication in docking. I don't have someone forward that can push off of a piling or throw a line. So, but it's been kind of fun. Every time I come in my mind, I think I know what's going to happen. What line I'm going to do what, where I'm coming from, what's the current doing, I'm going to throw off this stern line, if I can hit that cleat, we'll stop, I got the fenders out, yada yada. And sometimes it works just like I drew it out in my head, and I feel really smart, and then sometimes it looks catastrophically nothing at all like what I planned out in my head. And by the time it's done, which is fine, it doesn't bother me, I sit there going, what the heck happened? But the worst ever was me pulling into Jekyll Island, Georgia, which had been a not very fun stretch for me because I had run aground, hard aground, the day before, or 2 days before, just prior. So I was still a little frazzled from the grounding. I mean, keeled over the whole thing, but lay on its side, basically. And coming down whatever the river is into Jekyll Island, really strong current. And I had a slip at the marina there, and the current was heading south. I guess there would mean it was an ebb current. So I had to go past my spot and turn around and come back, so I was pointing into the current. And they told me where I was supposed to go, and I looked at it, and I've got, again, my about 35, 37 feet that I need. And there couldn't have been 40 feet of space in between two big boats, me going into the current, and the wind blowing across, not against, but across the current. And I came in very calmly and confidently, and about halfway into my maneuver, realized it was going terribly, terribly wrong. The wind was blowing the bow of my boat right towards one of the boats that was on the dock. Thank God I had a welcoming committee. So they scrambled like fighters on an aircraft carrier. There were people running around everywhere, jumping on boats to push my boat off. I didn't hit anything. I described it as coming in like a pinball, just kind of bouncing off anything in my path. We got settled in, didn't destroy anything. But it's just those, you think you know, you learn, you screw up. Hopefully, it just makes for a good story. No hospital visits or insurance claims. And next time you do better, I don't know.
It seems to work out. Well, John Herling, we could talk for hours about this, I feel. This is Sarah O'Kelly from Boat Radio and Skipper's Review. Catch in. When do you think you're going to be back here? Who knows? If you'll ever come back.
I refuse to put a date.
Yeah,
on.
I don't blame you.
Might have to Skype
sometime, somewhere. Maybe that's exactly what we'll do.
Okay.
It's been an awesome experience and informative chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And bon voyage.
Bon voyage. Thank you.